Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Well, welcome to the show. This is the DL Link show on 101.9 Chai FM, the show where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination. Wherever you are, whatever you are doing, I do hope that you are having a fabulous day so far in a world that seems to have gone quite crazy. I really do hope and pray that you find refuge and peace really from within. And I hope that on this show, on the DL Link show, we are able to inspire you to do that as well. Of course, we very often have experts on the show to keep you informed. And so today is really a combination of that. Our first guest will be joining us, Dr. Steven Zhlala, who's a neurosurgeon from Netcare Unitas Hospital. And we're going to be talking about a very specific brain tumor. And really the importance of listening to one's body. You know, we get these signs, these symptoms. How do we know when we're overreacting, and how do we know when we're just suppressing and not even listening? So we're going to be chatting with Dr. Zhlala. And then after that, Nadia Boysen is going to be joining us again. She joined us last year. She's a cancer survivor, and she's also an oncology counselor. And we're going to be unpacking and looking at hope and what hope is and what hope can generate when one is on a challenging journey, whatever the journey is, how we can play with hope, what we can do with hope, what it is to be a human being and have hope. And I'm sure you all agree with me that, we look at external circumstances and time again, it feels like that hope is being pulled away from us, which is why we really, really have to very consciously work on going deep within and relighting that fire, that little spark within. So that's what we're going to be discussing with Nadia. But first things first, Dr. Steven Zhlala, as I said, neurosurgeon from Netcare Unitas Hospital. Dr. Zhlala, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Nikki, for having me. It's a pleasure and quite an honor. Thank you to the listeners as well.
Well, for us, it really is a pleasure and honor. We know how busy you are, and so for you to take time out for us, we really are very grateful for that, Doctor. We were looking at Samson Mabunda, reading about this diagnosis that he had, a large pituitary adenoma brain tumor, which threatened his vision and his health. And I know that you operated on Samson. Perhaps you can just, before we even get there, let's just unpack what a pituitary adenoma brain tumor is.
Okay. All right. That's a very good question now. What a pituitary adenoma essentially is, it is a benign tumor. What benign means is it's non-cancerous. So it's a growth, which is non-cancerous. It arises from the pituitary gland. This is a very small pea size, if you may, gland that is in the center of the skull, deep in the base of the brain. And this is just behind the optic nerves. These are the nerves of the eyes. You know, Nikki, despite it being a very small gland, it plays a huge, significant role in the body. It is very important in terms of the control of the hormones, including the thyroid and many other various functions of the body from that.
So thank you for explaining that, Doctor. So let's just go back to this benign tumor, this growth, which is linked to the pituitary gland. And let's unpack, benign is so it's not cancerous, but I can only imagine that any tumor sitting in the brain can cause damage. So we're looking at a tumor that probably starts off very slow and small, and then it grows in this vital part of the brain. Can we just unpack, doctor, if you don't mind, how that would then show up? I mean, what kind of symptoms are you looking at? And maybe even before we get to the symptoms, if we could look at, even if a tumor is benign, what are the dangers around having even a benign tumor in the brain?
Yeah, there are several, obviously, problems that may arise from that. But to unpack it further, one has to understand and try and classify it. And this is how we do it. It's based on the size. Whether it is a micro, meaning a very small one, less than a centimeter, or a big one, more than a centimeter. And how they can present patients, it's variable. It's largely based on whether it is a large one or a small one. And majority of the smaller tumors, they mostly present with issues with hormones. Fair enough, that being said, that it is a benign. And you're quite right. Every tumor that sits in the brain has a potential to cause deficits or problems. And this is largely dependent on the type of tumor and the location. The pituitary one, the main symptoms that which can be quite devastating, because majority of them are, although benign, they're slow growing, it's issues with vision from that. So if left for long, that is one of the main things that can be a problem, which is visual deficits from that. So if you do have enough time, we can go through in detail, you know, Nikki, about the small pituitary ones, the large pituitary ones, and specifically how they present depending on the hormones from that. I don't know if you have the time when we can indulge into that.
Yes, I would like to, doctor, and I'll tell you why. We talk about listening to your body, and I know that Samson Mabunda, I mean, that's what he said, you know, because I know that with his symptoms, it started off, he felt dizzy at gym while he was exercising. Like, that was the first symptom, and was like unrelated, and he didn't even think about it. Then he'd be working on his screen, and then it would be shining and flashing, and again, you know. So, and it's not that we want to live in a state of fear. But yeah. I do think that it's important, doctor, for us to talk about, you know, the micro and then the bigger tumor and the kind of symptoms, because I do think we need to listen more to the messages that our body is giving us. So if you don't mind unpacking that, we'd really appreciate it.
Not at all. I actually do appreciate you giving me the platform and opportunity. I'd like to start with the smaller ones, because they're quite difficult to diagnose, and most of the symptoms are quite variable and they have an insidious onset. So the smaller ones, which are the microadenomas, patients may present with a myriad of symptoms, and often they present in a quite a delayed fashion. And the reason why that happens is because the symptoms are nonspecific. For instance, some patients may experience headaches. There are, if one goes through literature, more than 1,000 causes of a headache. So there can be headaches. And one other thing is fatigue. You know, one, we go to work, come back from work, and we feel tired. Sometimes we feel more tired than other days, and we feel like, you know, it's just stress, it's work, fatigue, weakness, generalized weakness. And we think, you know, that is part of the day. It has been a hectic day, it has been a hectic week, a hectic month, and so on and so forth. So fatigue is one of the symptoms, and it's quite vague. And then we start getting a little bit more specific. Things like weight gain and weight loss, particularly if it is unexplained. You know, the patients, they will struggle with maintaining a constant weight. They will gain weight rapidly or lose weight rapidly from that. And sometimes they can have issues with the menses, menstrual irregularities, missing periods, having irregular periods. And it can also affect fertility, difficulty in falling pregnant. Some of the patients, I actually get referrals from the gynecologist, only to find out that the reason why they've been trying out for so long, that they're having difficulties, they actually have a pituitary gland tumor, and that is causing hormonal imbalances, and they've been having menstrual irregularities, difficulty falling pregnant from that. And going deeper into that, actually, the sexual dysfunction, you can actually develop that as well. Loss of libido, low libido, erectile dysfunctions. And some of these things can be attributed to a lot of things. This is why I'm saying symptoms can be, or signs can be non-specific in a lot of the patients. So that patients are often pushed from this specialist to that specialist, from GP to GP. It's been a headache. I've been seeing a GP for the last 2 years for a headache, and it's not getting better. I've been having difficulties with my menses, and I've been seeing my GP for quite some time. Nothing happens, and I'm starting to see a gynecologist, and we don't see anything, mainly because they start off small. On average, it takes at least 5 years to diagnose some of these tumors, some even more, mainly because they are very small. Even though they're small, the microadenomas, they can cause big problems. So they often investigate and they don't find anything. And mainly because you have to do follow-up and constant re-evaluations, because sometimes the results come back as negative, but because it's very early on, you may miss it. But the problem still is there.
I mean, that sounds, and I'm so sorry to interrupt you, because I know you're in the middle of expanding, because I mean, just some of the symptoms you mentioned, a person could turn around and say, oh, well, I'm going through menopause, because as you've said, and it affects the hormones, and then you could go down that path. Meanwhile, you're missing, perhaps, as you say, what could be this tumor. Please carry on.
Yes, while we're still on that part, the menopause, yes, I've had referrals as well, like early menopause. We're trying to find out why you're having some early menopausal symptoms, as well as with males with decreased testosterone from that, difficulties with their sexual function. And sometimes, although this is a little bit easier sometimes to diagnose, we have specific kind of pituitary gland tumors which are called prolactinomas, and they mostly present with galactorrhea, meaning milk or breast discharge. So they're quite specific. So it's a little bit harder to miss them, because the symptoms are a little bit specific. Not a lot of things cause that. But as regards to other things, as you've correctly alluded, it could be attributed to a lot of things. Yeah, I'm tired. I have a headache. I miss my menses. I have a low libido. It could be attributed to anything. But this one in particular, it's a little bit easier to, well, not easier, but it's a little bit not that difficult to diagnose.
Is it easier to diagnose once the tumor has grown a little bit? Do the symptoms become a lot more specific? I mean, you talk about it being behind the optic nerve, that it could affect your vision. You know, if that happens, you would go to have your eyes tested. But if they can then see that, you know, it's more than that, then would that be the a first port of call? This could be a tumor. Is it easier once the tumor gets bigger?
You know, throwing a spanner to the works, making it a little bit more difficult. Some patients are often on other medications, which may mimic or which may present as like the other symptoms. So it's not that easy. This is why I'm saying it's difficult, as well as for some specialists, not just general practitioners, to diagnose this. But to be a little bit more specific, is the microadenomas, which are the small ones from that, they are difficult to diagnose. And some of them, the symptoms, and including the blood work, meaning the investigation, start becoming apparent or more visible as the tumor grows. Sometimes it's indifferent. The diagnosis is inconclusive if it's not that big, like very early on. It could be missed. For instance, you might have intermittent galactorrhea, meaning discharge from the breast. They do bloods. They're not that elevated. And then the important thing is to have a high index of suspicion that this might be, and we need to follow it up. Because it also depends on when you do them. They're quite specific, this, some of these investigations. The time of the day, when do you do them? What medication are you on? What medication should you not be on?
Wow. So this is complex, doctor. So, I mean, at the end of the day, in order to get the diagnosis, you know, this is what I have, is the only way through then, because as you said, there's so many variables. Would it then only be through, for example, an MRI?
Not necessarily. For larger ones, it's quite a little bit, I wouldn't say straightforward, but to make things much more simpler, I would say, I'll say straightforward. Because the larger ones, which are microadenomas, they cause symptoms, they visual symptoms, meaning their vision starts deteriorating. As they grow, they press on the optic nerve, which is the nerve responsible for vision. So then they can start having headaches, visual deterioration. And you know, everybody, once they start noticing visual deterioration, particularly because we use screens, we drive. So those are kind of the things that we spot earlier, because we need to renew our licenses. And majority of the time, this is actually how they are referred. They fail their renewal because their visual fields are now impaired. They cannot see properly. Or they are referred by the optometrist that the vision, there's something wrong. There's not a problem with the lens, but the problem with the nerve itself. So the bigger ones often present in that way, in the sense that the vision starts deteriorating. They don't necessarily cause issues with the hormones like the smaller ones. So they are less or a little bit less complex to diagnose because they're quite specific. You start having headaches, visual problems, and you do an MRI, you will see it. Blood's not so important, although they can cause problems because they make the tumor malfunction. So some of the hormones are low. So you can still have some of those symptoms I spoke about, like sexual dysfunction, loss of libido, persistent fatigue, weakness, all of those things from that. It is the smaller ones which are a little bit complex, some of them, not all of them. But the larger ones, mostly is that vision is impaired, headaches, do an MRI, you will see the lesion, and or you would have been referred by an optometrist or ophthalmologist from there.
And of course, doctor, I mean, when we look at, and thank you for explaining it so well, when we look at what happened with Samson Mabunda and you operated on him, you know, when you think of removing a tumor from the brain, it's really, really scary. But which is so interesting here is because you use an endoscopic technique. And perhaps you can speak to that in terms of recovery and the success of that overall kind of surgery.
Yes. Also another good question. You know, we are thankful to the advancements of technology in the medical field. Previously, this was some of the quite difficult tumors to treat or remove completely or cure them from that, particularly the very small ones, because they can be extremely small. We're talking about millimeters. But what exactly endoscopic surgery means is that we use an endoscope. This is a little camera. The same thing as general surgeons or gynecologists will use cameras to the abdomen. I work together with an ENT surgeon, which is an ear, nose, throat surgeon. They go through the nose. So they'll make a corridor through the nose onto the base of the skull. And this is where the gland sits. We open that and then start removing the tumor itself. So the use of that camera, it's quite magnified. It's high definition. And also the use of advanced of micro instruments. and advancements in some of the instruments, which make it a little bit easier to be more aggressive and more successful in removing the tumors from that. And in terms of, you mentioned, Nikki, recovery from that. Recovery is quite good. Often patients are there for a couple of days. It also depends on what was the initial issue. Some of them have significantly low hormones and they need to be replaced. But recovery in hospital is short. Some of them, they go to back to work within a couple of weeks from that. But it also depends on the hormones that need to be replaced. For some hormones, if they're extremely low, the recovery might be a little bit longer than anticipated from that. But the good thing about it, you know, Nikki, is we avoid the retraction of the brain. And this is working transcranial, because previously these tumors, you'll work by opening the skull on the side, transcranial. We don't need to do that. I don't need to touch the brain. So everything, we avoid all those things by going to the skull base, which is the floor of the brain. So everything comes from underneath. So in terms of once you start negating those complications from that, it's the pros of such surgery, particularly if it's feasible, is good.
Wow. Dr. Khlala, I mean, you said, you know, thank goodness for the advancements in medicine and what's available. But I mean, there's someone who's driving this, you know, and they're like you. And I'm just trying to imagine with inserting this up the nose and you've got this camera and, for example, the micro, which was less than a centimeter, a tumor, and you're extracting it. And I mean, it's just incredible. It's really, really incredible. And I mean, wow, as you say, you know, you don't want to be working and opening up the skull and, as you say, touching the brain. And here you're able to do that. It's just, it's incredible, the advancements, but that there are doctors who are trained and who can do it. So Dr. Khlala, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show, you know, explaining it so well. I'm sure there are many people who've been listening, who've been saying, oh, I'm feeling a little bit like this and I'm feeling a little bit like that. And it's certainly not about getting people neurotic, but it is about listening to bodies. It is about tracking the changes in the body. And it is about, you know, being informed, going to the doctors, having the checkups. And so thank you so much for that. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. And thank you very much for giving me the platform and for the listeners. I appreciate it, Nikki.
And we appreciate you, Doctor, and thank you for the amazing work that you do. Thank you very much. Take care and goodbye. Dr. Stevens Khlala, neurosurgeon from Netcare Unitas Hospital. You know, I have such tremendous respect. You know, starting off with Samson Mabunda's story, and he goes and he has this endoscopic surgery, and his life is just returning to normal. Absolutely amazing, but really a message, you know, we need to listen, not at the risk of, you know, getting nervous about every little symptom that comes up, but just know the body, feel the body, listen to the body. Wow. We are going to take a break, and then after the break, we're going to be chatting with Nadia Boyson, a cancer survivor and oncology counselor. Can we talk about something I think we all need a little bit of right now? That's hope.